You know, a lot has gone down in the sport of boxing in the last couple of weeks, and we're having a hard time digesting it all without the help of our resident sweet scientist himself, Lars from Nomas Online, and now of the Sporting News blog, which you can check them out at sportingblog.com. Lars, happy new year to you. And, you know, we don't like to take too much credit, but it seems a little ironic that, you know, you make your appearances at the park and then all of a sudden now you're writing for the Sporting News.
Oh, it's true. I think that I doubt that I would have gotten that gig without the Jerry Park love. There's no doubt about it. They mentioned that when they hired me.
Thank you for saying that.
They actually called me Larger Jerry Park. I was like, woo, 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 woo.
All right. Well, thank you for the compliment there. Okay, so like I said, a lot's been going down, and just a couple of days ago, a fight that I'm still having a hard time getting over. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased. My boy, Herman Ngoju, losing a controversial bout in some eyes to IBF light welterweight champion Pauly Malignaggi in enemy territory. A lot of people had it scored very weirdly. Some of the judges 116 to 111. You had it on Nomas. You wrote up in your great review of the fight that you actually had it a draw, if I'm not mistaken. Would love to get your thoughts on the bout and if, in fact, Ngoju deserved to be crowned the champion.
I don't think that Ngoju deserved to be crowned the champion. As I said in that piece, I did score it a draw. I didn't see it the night of the fight. I'm out here in Northern California where we've had some pretty awful storms that knocked out my cable, so I couldn't see the fight. So I watched it the next day, and I knew that I don't usually score fights because I find it really kind of tedious, but I knew that it was a very controversial decision, so I scored it. Just to see what I came out with. I came out with a 114-114 draw, but I also had a very strong feeling that, as I said in that Nomas piece, that there were a good five rounds that I felt like really could have gone either way, and not in the good way of could have gone either way either, the good way of that being, you know, that both guys landed a lot of big shots, and it was hard to say who came out more positively. Let me get rid of this car.
Oh, wow. Once again, Jerry Park loses the phone face off to Lars. That's two times that we've lost.
No, I just ignored it. I didn't even pick it up. That's how much I love
Jerry. Give
us
credit,
Park.
Though, that we won't even edit this. You know, this is not a live show, but we'll just put it up there for, maybe it's because we're lazy. Maybe we just like the flow of pretending we're live. But anyways, back to you.
Yo, man, I'm large. I'm a busy man. I get a lot of calls up in here.
That's true.
So five rounds, it could have gone either way, and not because both of them really distinguished themselves, but because both of them really didn't distinguish themselves. And it's rounds in that fight where nothing really happened, you know. And those are tough rounds to call. So on that sense, even though I had it a draw, I don't care that Malignaggi got a unanimous decision. I thought that's a fine way to score the fight. I really did think he could have scored it either way. I will say this in Malignaggi's defense for winning the fight. I had seven rounds that I thought somebody definitely won. I felt strongly about the winner, and Malignaggi won five of those rounds. And that is something I think about sometimes when I'm watching fights like this, where there are lots of rounds that seem very, very dicey because of inactivity. Then sometimes I feel like, well, more emphasis should be placed on those rounds where somebody did decisively win. So I had Malignaggi in the seven rounds that I thought where something actually happened, Malignaggi won five of them, I thought. On the other hand, in one of the rounds that Ngoju won, he nearly knocked him out. I mean, even Malignaggi admitted afterwards that he was way farther down Queer Street than even Ngoju seemed to know. He was really buzzed in there. So that's one thing that's disappointing coming out of the fight, no doubt. It's always hard to watch a fight where only one guy clearly gets hurt in the course of the fight, and yet that guy that gets hurt, that guy that's the only guy who gets hurt also ends up winning. That's always an unsatisfying result. But I rest the final case that Ngoju didn't deserve the win in terms of the fact that there was a belt at stake, and, you know, it was a 12-round title fight, and it's a long-held tenet of boxing that you have to beat the champion to take his belt. And I don't think anybody could watch that fight and say that there was a conclusive victory for Ngoju. And so if they had ruled it a draw, that would have been fine, I think. But on the whole, I can't say that I have much problem with the decision.
Yeah, in the words of the incomparable Ric Flair, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And I guess you could say Herman didn't fully beat the man, Paulie Malignaggi. And like I said, I look at this fight with biased eyes, but you're right. To take that belt away, you really need to go a step above of what he was doing out there. You mentioned in your review of the bout of the comparisons to Willie Pep, Paulie Malignaggi to Willie Pep. Al Bernstein was loving those comparisons. A very no-mas comparison, but really not one. What are your thoughts?
Yeah.
You touched on this in your review, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on crowning Malignaggi the new Willie Pep.
Definitely not a no-mas in comparison. As I wrote, I think that's a disgrace. And Al Bernstein, I mean, to be honest, I think Al Bernstein's just taking the chance to mention the name Willie Pep. He's a distinguished boxing historian, and so he's just loving on the fact that he gets to say Willie Pep in front of a bunch of people who could give a crap. But still, the comparisons come from the fact that Malignaggi is a guy with no pop, who frequently makes his opponents look bad because of his mobility in the ring, and is born in Sicily. But those are pretty thin things to hang a comparison on. I mean, Willie Pep is an all-time fighter, and I put a video up on Nomas just to remind people, because I think even watching it was the fourth Pep Sadler fight, which is, those four fights that's considered one of the greatest series in the history of the sport. And even losing that fight and taking a hell of a beating, it's pretty clear to see what a beautiful fighter Willie Pep was to watch. The famous fight world legend about Willie Pep is that he once won a round without throwing a punch. And he does seem like he could do that. Paulie Malignaggi, particularly after this result, this is what I wrote as well, and I really feel this. Whoever got the decision, and it should have been a close decision, it was a crappy fight, and the real loser was Paulie Malignaggi, because he wants to be on the big stage, and boy, he really didn't show any reason Saturday night to think that he should be. And I think that for him, Saturday night was a major failure. And you can already tell by what he's saying in the aftermath. Like, look, don't judge me on that performance. And unfortunately, he hasn't fought in a while, and that's the only performance we have to judge him on. I don't know if it gets him in the ring with Ricky Hatton, who, ironically, I have to point this out, is the last person that I heard mention Willie Pep in a big forum talking about himself, which was also a disgrace. After the Castillo fight, I remember saying, what did he say? Oh, it killed me. He said, oh, I thought my performance tonight was a little Joe Frazier, a little Willie Pep. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, I think it was a whole lot of neither.
I love that accent. That was great.
Yeah, I could after four repeated episodes, I probably watched each episode of 24/7 three times.
Right.
So I can do a little Ricky Hatton at this point.
All right. So do you actually think, despite the fact that his performance was less than stellar, do you think that that's the obvious bout for these two guys, Hatton Malignaggi, or maybe Malignaggi needs to kind of build himself up a little more before testing his strength against Hatton?
I would be surprised if Ricky Hatton, coming off the Floyd fight, which sort of catapulted him into a stratosphere with which he is unfamiliar, I would be surprised if he chose as his next opponent Paulie Malignaggi from Brooklyn. And particularly after that fight, if Malignaggi, there was a lot of talk going into that fight, and if Malignaggi had done something spectacular in that fight, maybe it would have raised his profile and raised the profile of that potential bout to a point where it could happen. But Ricky Hatton's got a problem right now, I feel like, in that his two natural opponents and the ring number one and two contenders at 140 are Malignaggi and Junior Witter. And Junior Witter is another English guy who has been angling for a Hatton fight for years, and I do think it would be a much bigger fight in England than Malignaggi Hatton would be anywhere. But I think that Hatton has a little bit of a problem with Junior Witter that I still feel, and there's been a lot of argument about this, but I still feel that Floyd has with Cotto, which is that it's not quite a big enough money fight, and yet it's a big risk fight. I think that Junior Witter's been calling Hatton yellow for years, really calling him out, challenging his manhood. And if Hatton finally gave in to the fight because it was the best fight out there for him to take and lost it, particularly coming after that loss to Floyd, would be devastating to his career. So I do think Hatton is avoiding Witter. And then Malignaggi really showed himself Saturday night to be kind of a weak second sister on that one. So if I'm Ricky Hatton, man, I am sitting around, you know, saying rosaries for Oscar De La Hoya, because other than that, I don't know what fight he's going to make. And I also don't think Ricky Hatton's very good. I do think that he would beat Paulie Malignaggi without even having to try very hard. But I think he'd have a tough time with Junior Witter. And there aren't many other big-name opponents out there for him. One fight I did think about, because there's been all this talk about Pacquiao jumping into a higher weight class, and that's going to be a risky move for Pacquiao, and there's talk about a Pacquiao-Oscar De La Hoya fight. But I thought Pacquiao-Hatton is an interesting fight, and a fight that Pacquiao could probably want to win. I mean, that's what usually you're going to find people going after Hatton, big-time dudes going after Hatton, who are looking for somebody they know they can beat, you know, because he's got a big name and he's not very good. And there hasn't been any talk anywhere about Pacquiao Hatton, so it's not a rumor that I'm passing along. It's just something that occurred to me because they're two pretty frenetic guys with similar styles. And I thought, boy, if I were Pacquiao and I was considering a jump and looking for a big name opponent that might not knock my head off, you know, I might think about Ricky Hatton.
All right, let's move on, because like I said, it's been a while since we spoke to you and a lot to cover. A lot of news coming out of boxing. Just before the new year, there was obviously the Floyd Mayweather talk of he and Mark Cuban getting in bed together to potentially fight in the world of mixed martial arts for HDNet fights. Let's kind of move the discussion along, because whether or not Mayweather is in fact interested in trying his hand in an MMA bout is kind of up in the air right now. But do you believe that in 2008, maybe 2009, that we will actually ever see a true, you know, viable competitor from the world of boxing move into MMA, at least for one bout, maybe two, to kind of end this discussion? I, on one hand, think it's a stupid discussion. I think both, you know, both sports are kind of apples and oranges, but love to hear your thoughts on the whole, you know, boxer coming over to MMA to kind of settle it for once and for all.
I think it's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen. And it'll probably be a unique guy that can make it happen. But I do think it's going to happen. And I think that there's a reason that Floyd is flirting with it now and talking about it. Because it's on everybody's mind, at least the first time that it happens. I think it's going to be a mega event. This big MMA audience, obviously a big boxing event, can draw a huge crowd. You bring those two together, you're going to have something gigantic. Plus, I do think that it would be a crossover event because it's got the curiosity factor. I think a lot of people that aren't interested in either sport would tune in just to see the spectacle. So because, you know, money talks, and I think the money would be there. It would be complicated to make it happen, but because I think that there's a lot of money at stake, it's hard for me to imagine that it won't come around eventually. When that will be, I don't know, because obviously, particularly I feel like the boxer who does it, you know, boxing is more high profile. MMA is kind of the upstart in the situation. They would be, rightfully or wrongfully, you know, however you look at it, I think that the MMA guys would be kind of like the underdog historically in the situation. I think a boxer who went in and lost a boxer to versus MMA guy would be the more humiliated rather than a boxer managing to knock out an MMA guy. Obviously, if Floyd put his reputation on the line and went in there and got destroyed, it would be a huge amount of egg on his face. So I know that he will think twice about it, but I do think it's going to happen. I want to see it happen just because I want to see it. I have my doubts. You know, we all have the Ali, what was it? Inoki? Was that the wrestler's name?
Inoki.
You know, we've all seen that crap on YouTube, and I don't think that it's out of the realm of possibility that that's what an MMA boxing matchup could look like. I think that, you know, when you think about it, I think that the way Floyd punches and how accurate and fast he is, there's nothing, none of these guys would ever have seen anything like that. And the power of his punches, I think, would be shocking to MMA guys. So Floyd's obviously considered a light hitter in the boxing world. The boxers punch with a lot more torque than MMA guys usually do. Obviously, if Floyd ended up on the ground, he'd be in big trouble. You know, I don't think Floyd has given a lot of thought in his life to the arm bar. Right. And little things like that, I feel like it would be so elementary for a real jiu-jitsu guy to pull on him that he'd be screwed as soon as he went off his feet. And I think he would know that as well. So I think what you'd have, I mean, it's the octagon's pretty big, you know. I think you'd have Floyd really staying away from the guy and looking for opportunities to punch, and the other guy really staying away from Floyd's fists and looking for opportunities to shoot on him and take him down. And so it seems to me, when I think about the strengths of each in the apples and oranges aspect of that, that there's a good chance that it would be incredibly boring. But let's face it, you and me both, and everyone out there who's remotely like us, would be watching that thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there one guy, though, out there that you would sort of like to recommend as being the first, you know, when all this talk started, Curbit Citron said that, you know, due to his wrestling background, he would be interested. Dana White, the UFC president, kind of laughed him off and said, you know, who the hell is Curbit Citron? But is there one guy out there, whether or not he's a huge name, but a guy that you think that would be able to really give an MMA fighter a chance, a viable fight? Because let's face it, the boxer is going to come in at a disadvantage just because the MMA guy knows how to box a little bit, obviously not as good as the boxer, but he has this whole other arsenal of moves and techniques that he can use in the bout, which the boxer will now have to learn from scratch.
Yeah, I guess Cintron has a wrestling background, and so that's what you would, basically what you would need would be a boxer who had enough of a wrestling background that he would have some sort of fundamental idea of how to get out of holds and how to get back on his feet, you know. And obviously there are guys in MMA that would rather fight on their feet than not, and devote their focus to that. And when they're on the ground, they're looking to get off the ground. And that's, you have to imagine. See, I do think, I mean, I read a lot of stuff where MMA guys are, you know, scoff at the idea of Floyd beating one of their guys, and all the focus is what would happen is when he got taken down. But, you know, as with Ricky Hatton, you got to get close to a guy like Floyd to put him on the ground, you know, and when those hands start flying, and particularly with no gloves, I mean, that's another concern with Floyd is his hands, but nevertheless, with the glove that you use in MMA, Chris, I imagine Floyd rattling off one of his combinations, and that could be that. You know, he gets two or three of those suckers in there clean, and that could be that. So it's not clear to me that Floyd is the right guy. Cintron can, I think, most top level boxers are going to be very, very difficult for any MMA guy to deal with on their feet. And so if Cintron has enough wrestling experience that if somebody got him on the ground, that he could at least, you know, fend off the moves that they're going to put on him, fend off any tap-out situation, and manage to get back on his feet. That seems like the key. It is hard to imagine a boxer at that level taking the time to train. The money would have to be there, but maybe the money will be there. Yeah, Cintron, there's going to be that problem for a while too, which is that it is basically boils down to the who the hell is Curbit Citron argument, you know, because for this to happen, it's going to have to be a lot of money, I think.
Right.
And Curbit Citron doing anything just does not mean a lot of money right now. It's just the way it is.
Unless your name is Paul Williams.
So, unless your name is Paul Williams, yeah. I don't think either of those guys are getting serious. I mean, they're probably, I don't know what they're taking, but, you know, he's just not a big money guy. So, I don't know. I don't know any boxers that have a wrestling background. It is hard for me to imagine who it would be. Well, you'd think that somebody had the right body. You know, Cotto's got a good wrestling body.
Yeah, that would be insane. Imagine Cotto going over with his thick frame. I think that would be.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously, he's not doing that anytime soon. But, you know, you talk about a connection between MMA and boxing, a sad connection in the last couple of days. Obviously, the untimely death of Yoram Choi comes off the death of Sammy Vasquez a month ago, an MMA fighter who died in Houston. Now you have a boxer dying. What do you make of deaths inside
the ring? Vasquez, too, I didn't read much about that, but was he... not many MMA guys have died, have they?
He's actually the first recorded official MMA death in a sanctioned bout. There was one guy who died over a decade ago. It was an unsanctioned bout
back in the
Ukraine.
In the bad old days.
Yeah. But this was the first one on American soil. And there is some question as to whether or not he was, you know, fully healthy going into the bout. Talk of blood clots in his brain and whatnot. But it seemed as though he was checked out pretty well. And it was just, obviously a tragic incident. Yoram Choi.
Most guys who die in a fight go in there with something wrong, which isn't to say that it wasn't boxing's fault. Usually what was wrong when they went in there was caused by boxing. But generally that's what they believe. I mean, it's understood with head injuries that this is something I've often thought of in the tragedy of Ali and how Ali has ended up, because they say that once your brain is injured, you know, once you've incurred actual brain injury that's going to impair function, and you continue at that point to receive blows, the damage exponentially becomes more severe. So you see what I'm saying? Like, the thing is that once you're hurt, you really need to stop. And I've seen shots of Ali giving interviews in 77, 78, when he's still fighting. And I already noticed the slurring of his speech. You know, I often wonder, because I didn't when I was a kid, and I often wondered, did no one else kind of notice this happening? You know, putting it in contrast to the Ali of the 70 and 71, who was just the fastest talker of all fast talkers. I see him at 77, 78, and I'm thinking, man, he's already starting to lose it, and he's still in there getting pounded on. So anyway, that's just an aside, but I do think most guys that end up dying in a fight went in there with the terminal blood clot situation, just a time bomb waiting to happen.
Yeah, it's I guess it's just sort of what comes with the territory in terms of being boxing. I actually had a chance to watch that fight on the internet, and it didn't really look that bad. But obviously, in the next couple of weeks, we'll probably know more about, you know, his health going into the bout and everything that came along with it. Want to get your thoughts on the next big quote unquote boxing bout of the year, scheduled next weekend in Madison Square Garden. It's Roy Jones Jr. against Felix Trinidad. I think they should be billing this one maybe 5 or 6 years too late, but nevertheless, they are asking us to pay around $50 to watch these two guys fight. And just want to know, is there any interest out there? Is there any way that you can, you know, convince me or anyone listening out there that there is a viable reason to watch these two guys battle it out?
Well, I need to correct you, first of all. I think it's 2 weekends from now, right?
Right, it is 2 weekends. Yeah. Good point.
I would like to mention before we get into that this is it. Now you got me confused. I think it's this Friday night fight. You got your boy Jean Pascal fighting.
Yes.
I'm surprised that the franchise did not hit me with a Jean Pascal question.
Well, you know, I get heat sometimes for being too much of a, you know, of a homer. So I got to spread it out a bit. I mean, I was going to ask you one last question about Lucien Boutte, but I was going
to... No more Boutte. Pascal should fight Boutte.
Yeah, that'd be big money.
Big Canadian fight. Well, so Friday Night Fight's got Edson Miranda and Pascal on the card, and evidently they're angling for a big fight. Roy and Tito. I'm having trouble generating any interest for myself, that's for sure. Other than the fact that, you know, Tito Trinidad is one of those names that that just strikes a certain feeling into your heart. He was so much fun to watch in his prime, and such a charismatic fighter. I love his style. But boy, I can't help but think when I think about this fight, thinking about the way that Tito literally just got pantsed. I mean, in the last 5 years, the all-time pantsing was definitely Floyd of Gotti. That was just embarrassing. But what Winky did to Tito was in the top 10. You know, he just looked helpless in that fight. On the other hand, you know, you got Roy Jones, who obviously in his prime was one of the most devastating punchers, one of the most exciting stylists. And yet with him, I can't help but think about, you know, I mean, number one, you think about just him getting knocked out by guys who can punch, you know, but not by really terrifying punchers by any means. And then you think about what he's done. He's fought twice, right?
Right.
I'm looking at it on Boxrec right now because I've seen the two fights that he's had.
You mean you don't know this off the top of your head?
I don't know it off the top. I'm right. I just got it up. He's fought twice since the third Tarver fight, and both against tomato cans. Prince Ajamu. God, I watched both of these fights. What is wrong with me in my life that I've watched these fights? And then that fight, which was last July, against Anthony Hanshaw, and Roy had a real tough time in that one. My memory of that fight is that I think he knocked Hanshaw out. He knocked him down in the 11th, and up until that point, it really felt like it could have gone either way. I got the scoring here. Yeah, well, so a couple of judges saw it real Roy's way. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that Roy was in there battling with a nobody, you know. Roy going 12 rounds with Anthony Hanshaw and having a tough time of it does not exactly bode well for the future of Roy Jones. So, no, I don't have a lot of interest. Yeah, it's going to be tough. I am just in my line of work. I'm going to have to shell out the money to watch that thing, and I don't feel good about it, believe me.
That was my next question.
All I can say about the fight is if – It's basically going to boil down to who can summon some shadow of their former selves, because in their prime, it would have been an interesting fight, although in their prime, Roy would have been a lot bigger. But forgetting about that for a second, in their prime, it would have been an interesting kind of matchup. I think about Tito Trinidad and the way that he got handled by Winky Wright, and you think that if Roy has any of that dazzling speed and boxing style left in him, it's going to give a Tito Trinidad who hasn't fought in like 3 years, you know, I mean, 2.5 years, right? And so you got to think that if Roy can put any hand speed together, it can be very tough for Tito to handle. On the other hand, if Tito still got that pop in that right hand, you know, we've seen it before with Roy. He will fold like a house of cards. You know, he takes one anywhere near the button, and he'll go down. So it's sort of hard to say.
A couple of other interesting bouts that were officially announced this week. Obviously, it hasn't, I think, been totally officially, but it seems to be a foregone conclusion, the Joe Calzaghe-Bernard Hopkins bout. And there's also one involving a big fan favorite of yours, a guy that you mentioned on our site a couple of times, David Haye, who appears to have signed to fight on Showtime in a couple of weeks. Actually, no, it's going to be March 8th against Enzo.
Fighting Enzo, right?
Yeah, yeah. Against your boy Enzo. So, you know, a lot of people have yet to hear a lot about Haye.
Is that fight made?
Yeah, it was made actually just today. I read. From one of my sources, aka the internet,
is it a cruiserweight?
Yeah, it's a cruiserweight bout. It's going to be at the O2 Arena and March 8th on Showtime in the UK. Be there, London.
That's a good fight.
Yeah, it is a great fight. So tell us about David Haye. I mean, some people, I'm guessing a lot of people out there haven't had a chance to see him just because he's, you know, kind of new to the scene. You know, he's a heavyweight, obviously, but tell us about what we should expect from him.
Well, I don't know a tremendous amount about him either.
Jesus Christ.
I have watched him. I have watched him before, and you know, my main excitement about David Haye is just that he's looking to break into the heavyweight ranks, and he's got fast hands. He's a type of heavyweight. You know, I'm so sick of, you know, we got fights coming up. We got We got one of our heavyweight champions, Ruslan Chagaev, who will be fighting on the same night as Tito and Roy Jones in Dusseldorf against what's that guy's name? Matt Skelton, who's a former MMA guy. And then you got the Abrajimov Klitschko fight coming up in February, which I'm actually looking forward to just because it's a heavyweight unification fight for once. But you know, I'm just getting a little tired of these. You know, you got Oleg Maskayev out there. I'm getting a little tired of these big Russian slabs of dude. You know, kind of sort of flabby, big, pale dudes who seem like they're heavy, like. You know, they're heavyweight champions, but they also probably are longshoremen somewhere. Like, I don't know where these dudes keep coming from. And I just want somebody who looks like, now, I, you know, I've slowly come around to Klitschko, and Klitschko has really developed under Manny Stewart, and that is inarguable. But he's going to be a tough beat for anybody in the heavyweight division. But I'm just dying for somebody in the heavyweight division who looks like an athlete, you know, and who seems like an athlete, who seems like they have some real boxing skill, and the reason that they're in there is not just that they're big and that they can take a mighty punch. And so what I've seen of David Haye is that he's a pretty exciting boxer, and like a lot of guys in his territory, the Chris Bird territory, he's going to have some trouble fighting the Klitschkos of the world because, you know, he fights, well, he's a cruiserweight right now, you know, in the days of the cruiserweight going up into the heavyweight ranks very easily, a la Evander Holyfield, I just think are over, you know. I mean, a fight that I'm really looking for, the fight that I'm most looking forward to in the rest of January is the Povetkin Chambers heavyweight eliminator. And that's a big fight for me because Eddie Chambers fights out of Philly.
Oh, look, it's also a big fight. The Philly guys, huh?
Yeah, but it's a big fight nevertheless because Povetkin has a lot of juice around him as a young boxer puncher. Obviously, he's Russian, but, you know, he's an exciting fighter. And the thing that's interesting to me about that heavyweight eliminator fight is that both those guys are going to come in under 220. I guess Povetkin fights at about 220. And Eddie Chambers is a much smaller heavyweight, fights around 210. And the winner of that fight will be fighting Klitschko, who presumably by the time they fight will own two heavyweight belts. So my main interest in David Haye is that he's got speed, you know, he's shown the ability to knock people out. He's got some real boxing ability, in the ring and he's got his eyes on the heavyweight. I mean, like most boxing people, I think we had a great year, but I think everybody is always sitting around waiting for who that next heavyweight is going to be. Will it be David Haye? I don't know. But I like that Enzo bout, and I like that it's on Showtime because it allows him to get some play in the U.S. and start to build his name a little and build some excitement around him because, hey, you know, it's tough in boxing. You want the sport to have a high profile, but when the heavyweight division is such a mess, it's very difficult to garner that big-time interest. And so maybe we'll see it this year. I'm interested in the Klitschko-Abrashimov fight. You know, it's our first heavyweight unifier since Lennox Holyfield.
And that's a great segue for my final question to you, Lars. I'm hearing rumors today that Mike Tyson is interested in fighting and completing the trilogy against Evander Holyfield. Now tell me you wouldn't pay $50 to watch that final
bout. Oh, jeez. Oh, yeah. That's a horrifying thought. Jeez.
Did you hear the same thing? Did you hear that?
I haven't seen it, no. Where'd you see it at?
I'll tell you off the record.
Okay. I have not seen that, and the thought is just horrifying. Although, again, on the Money Talks territory, it's not surprising. I mean, the ear bite fight is one of the most famous fights ever. You know, you ask a non-boxing fan. You ask somebody who doesn't care about boxing at all. You know, you ask a girl who doesn't care about boxing at all to name a fight, and they might come up with that fight. You know, so it doesn't surprise me that they're talking about it. Plus, I imagine that Tyson is as he usually is, so grossly in debt and in need of money. So, boy, yeah, of course I'd shell out the money. I'm a sucker. I'd go. But I have to imagine, hey, Holyfield's still fighting. I have to imagine that Holyfield would just win it again.
All right, so we'll hold that too. We'll hold you up to that. Holyfield wins again. I think for the sake of boxing, we talk about injuries and whatnot and tragedies in the ring. All kidding aside, I hope that we don't see that bad. At least not Holyfield in the ring again. I think his shot
I've been sailed. I've been writing open letters to Evander, you know, to quit for years now. I really want him to stop. Talk about somebody who very clearly already has brain damage and is still going in there and taking a pounding. It's amazing that the people that love these guys can't get them to stop when they're at that territory. And you know, it's a long time tragedy in the sport of boxing that the people can't give it up. But with Evander is certainly the most high profile example of that familiar story in boxing right now. I agree with you. I hope he doesn't fight again. I hope Tyson doesn't fight again either. That freak show is time has passed.
Tyson needs to come to a WWE ring. I think that's where he needs to make his money now, because Lord knows Vince McMahon would want him back after the huge money that they made together, WrestleMania, just a few years ago. So that's what I'm holding out for, but something tells me it's not going to happen. Or another edition of the Monster Mash with Bobby Brown. That was awesome. That video. That was great.
That is one of the YouTube high points of the last 5 years, no doubt about it.
All right, Lars, great talking to you as always. Thanks for the insight, the knowledge, and enjoy the fights. And you know, sporting news. Don't forget where you came from. Is all I have to say.
No, I never. I'm still just Lars from the block.
Right. Awesome. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah. Take care.